This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep. Today is the Muslim holy day of prayer, and it is the second straight Friday of a daytime curfew in Baghdad. The curfews came after the bombing of a shrine and a wave of attacks that raised fears of an outright civil war. Violence continued overnight as a number of people were killed in factories outside Baghdad. One dividing line in Iraq is between Sunni and Shiite Muslims. The Shiite majority is coming to dominate Iraq, and this morning we will visit the religious capital for the Shiite sect. That city, Najaf, has been relatively peaceful for more than a year, though stability is not assured. NPR's Ann Garrels tells a story of lessons hard learned.
The music issuing forth from stalls in Najaf is strictly religious. Every woman is cloaked from head to toe in a black robe. Clerical turbans abound. This is the Shiite heartland. It is home to many of Shiite Islam's most revered shrines and Iraq's leading Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani. It is to him that most Iraqi Shiites look for guidance. Muhammad Ali Jassim, a 50-year-old engineer, is happy with recent developments here.
Security is good now. You even see people out at night. It's not like Baghdad, where friends say the situation is really bad.
Najaf was not always so peaceful. In 2004, when the young Islamist Muqtada Sadr challenged both the U.S. and the established clerical establishment, the city was the scene of full-scale fighting. Sadr's Mehdi army was pushed out, but much of the old city was left in ruins. Jassim now points to the dozens of small hotels where Shiite pilgrims stay. They're the lifeblood of Najaf's economy.
These hotels were all destroyed last year. When I saw the damage, I was in despair. But they have been rebuilt.
As he speaks, an impromptu debate erupts on the street over who is responsible for the improvements, and divisions are clear. Ali Muhammad, a policeman, says the U.S. should be given some credit. But Amr Majid, a trader, interrupts.
The Americans came for their own interests. If the Americans were to leave, everything would be fine. They're behind all the country's problems.
On hearing this, passerby 25-year-old Saeed Fouad Al-Grabi jumps into the fray.
What are you talking about? If America leaves now, the Ba'athists will come back. True, we don't want the Americans, but they need to control security before they leave.
In a discreet set of rooms tucked away in a corner of the governor's building, the American military keeps a low profile. A small group of soldiers works with Iraqi counterparts, monitoring radio dispatches, ready to call in reinforcements if needed. The bulk of American troops in this area are now based well outside town. A small civil affairs team helps reconstruction efforts. U.S. officials concede a lot of the millions of dollars thrown at Najaf was not always well spent. Since he arrived last summer, Major Greg Scott, a reservist with the 4th Infantry Division, has worked closely with Iraqi engineers, and he says things have improved.
I think this whole process is a lot better. I mean, the Iraqis, their process of doing things is good. Their standards are good. We just never really listen to them, in my opinion.
36-year-old Haider Al-Maali is the city's chief engineer.
U.S. officials admit they didn't foresee what would happen in Iraq, but there were a lot of mistakes, and Iraqis made mistakes too.
He says Americans now listen to what Iraqis say are their priorities. There's been progress providing clean water and paved roads, but an $8 million refurbishment at Najaf's only maternity hospital remains months behind schedule. The American contractor, Parsons, refused to comment for this report, but according to the hospital's deputy director, Dr. Raed Umran, the repairs were supposed to be finished last November. Now March, only a third of the reconstruction is complete. He leads the way up the stairs. The elevators had to be redone because the initial work was so shoddy. He expected more from Americans.
Can be better.
How?
By more professional workers and more professional supervisors.
In the section of the hospital yet to be fixed, the linoleum is peeling, the walls crumbling, and the rooms overflowing with patients.
We cannot reject to receive patients. This ward, six beds. And now it's about 20 patients.
Right.
Six beds
for 20 babies.
Yes.
Though there are no official statistics, Dr. Umran says infant mortality is still unacceptably high because of a lack of critical equipment. A baby with pneumonia is given oxygen with a mask designed for adults.
We have no other choice.
Drug supplies are irregular because of dangers on the road from Baghdad. Dr. Umran would like nothing more than to ignore politics and concentrate on his patients. But peaceful Najaf is not immune to the problems in the capital.
I want to go to Baghdad to get a course of training about certain things. I want to develop my knowledge. I cannot go to Baghdad because I am afraid.
To study via the internet, he needs a credit card, an impossibility here.
When I enter the site of American Academy of Pediatrics, to subscribe as a membership. There is new journals, new articles. I cannot get this because I don't have the visa or MasterCard.
Progress is fragile, as is political stability. With the defeat of Muqtada Sadr, the city has been under the control of a rival Shiite political party, Skiri. But intra-Shia rivalries are re-emerging. When demonstrations erupted here last week to protest the bombing of a Shiite shrine, the first on the street was the Mehdi army, hundreds of Sadr supporters in their hallmark black clothing. They blamed the U.S. for Iraq's problems. Their numbers and clear organization were a sign of the militia's resurgence, as well as Sadr's new political clout in Baghdad. This frightens Haider, a young government employee. He fears Sadr and his Mehdi army could once again destroy the peace in Najaf and elsewhere.
From their announcement, from their advertisement, from their speech, most of them, they are anti-government, anti-coalition forces.
Politicians and leading clerics, guarded by bodyguards, constantly file in to consult the reclusive, aging Grand Ayatollah Ali al-Sistani. From behind the scenes, he's advised competing Shiite factions, advanced Shiite interests, and tried to keep the country whole. But tensions between Muqtada Sadr and rival Shiite parties are threatening to break up the Shiite alliance Sistani has nurtured, and Sistani's repeated calls for Shiite restraint in the face of Sunni attacks is meeting with growing Shiite frustration. Rezek Mehdi, a Najaf civil servant, says enough is enough.
The Sunnis see we are silent and obedient to our senior clerics.
The escalating sectarian violence, Shiite tensions, and the continued failure to form a new government threaten all the gains in Najaf and stability in the rest of the country. Sistani's influence is stretched as never before. Anne Gerrels, NPR News.
NPR's Abdullah Mizyad also contributed to this report.